there. Welcome to SaaS Unbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at SaaS Groups. Here, LeQuire, buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Andre, co-founder at Social Insider, social media analytics, reporting, and benchmarking tool. Welcome.
Hey, Anna. Glad to be here.
Great to see you here. Just came back from Bucharest. I mean, it seems like it's been years already, but it's been like 2 weeks.
Yeah, time flies.
Right? Time flies. Crazy. But great that you're here. And, you know, let's talk Social Insider. Let's talk everything, you know, SaaS and AI. But before we jump into it, let's talk about you and, you know, how are you? What you're doing? How you got to do what you, you're doing right now?
Great. So, as a lot of founders, I'm a technical person at heart. So I started out as a programmer. I worked in security, but then at some point, the three founders, met and said, "Okay, we need to do something else." And for it, we looked into the space of marketing tools because we had a marketing expert among us, Adina. And we started building something in Red Ocean. It wasn't the best pick at the time. It was a big tool, kind of enterprise salesy, weird to sell as a startup with no sales experience. But then Social Insider was one of the features of that bigger tool. We coded everything. We were kind of doing it all, as you do with startups at the beginning. Then we spun Social Insider off as its own product, and we found market fit, and the ball kept rolling, and here we are kind of 7 years later.
Okay, that's very much in a nutshell. All right, since you already mentioned we found product market fit, I cannot not jump on it because, I mean, everyone's looking for it, right? It's like it's like a unicorn. Does it exist? Does it not? How did you do it?
So I'm in the kind of camp that says product market fit is a continuous kind of task. We looked at the space and what competitors do and figured out we can do it better, cheaper, faster. So the users were kind of educated on what they needed. This has helped us a lot because investing in education is quite hard. But we nailed this trifecta of quality, speed, and price. And this led us to get the first users. Now, as we grew, we are now hitting some pains around, okay, we have users, we have paying customers, but not all of them are ideal. We do have product market fit, but we want to narrow it down to the special kind of subset of users that are really going to extract the most value out of Social Insider and out of using it. So I would say you can kind of stumble into product market fit if you experiment a lot, but then you need to double down and kind of evolve it as you go because time flies, things change. You might fit the market right now, but in a year, you might be out of it again. So it's kind of a continuous effort.
Thank you for saying that. And to be honest, I've been saying it to everybody who says that because I feel like I remember 3-4 years ago when you were talking about product market fit, it was always some kind of like summit that you had to reach. And it was such a, it was like a unicorn. Everyone was like in search of this one particular point in life of their startup. And I was like, wait, but you're growing and like you're growing, you're adding features and you're becoming relevant for a different market and then different and you're going like you're increasing your prices, you're becoming relevant for something else. And like, how is it even a, like one place? So yeah, I was always curious, like if, what happens to those big believers when something changes. But what is it now? So since, you said you found it anyway, what is it? Like, what's your ICP? Who is getting the value out of Social Insider now? And who do you think should?
That's a great question. So we're in the middle of the figuring out process all the time. But right now, I would say that the ideal people that we want in the dashboard are marketers or social, more specifically social media strategists, or they're part of a department, of a marketing department where social is important, and they want to drive strategy. They don't just want to create a report for what they did in the previous month. They want to look at what they did. They want to look at the whole vertical or competitors. They want to analyze the competitor strategy, analyze their own, and make decisions based on that. And it has to be a process on their end. If it's a one-time thing, they're not ideal customers. They might use for a month. But if it's in their DNA that they want to drive strategy and they're serious about it, then they're ideal customers for us.
Okay. And what is kind of the most tracked metric or the most like used feature of Social Insider? Like where is that aha moment for social media strategists there?
So we have layered features based on product depth or understanding of the user. So one of the most important ones would be benchmarking. So comparing your performance versus competition or players in your niche. And then as a cherry on top, if you go into content and label it and use what we call content pillars to segment kind of what you post and what your competitors posted, that's going to be the next level. And once I look into Mixpanel or whatever tool and I see that you activated that feature and you use it monthly, I'm sure you're getting a lot of value from the tool and you're the right type of customer we want.
Awesome. Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, everyone wants a comparison. I think that's just something like now we have, you know, this all this new little tools popping up where you can see how your brand performs in AI search engines. And like no one knows really what to do with the data yet. But you still want to be there. You still want to look. And this comparison is like, okay, we're doing better. We don't know why, but we do. It's kind of fun.
If we want to keep doing better, we should figure out why we're doing better, because otherwise we can't repeat it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's for sure. So, okay. So kind of following up on the repeatable success and just like figuring out how to work with social media strategy, what do you think are kind of the biggest or the most common mistakes that social media marketers make? And especially when it comes to working with data and, you know, not just working with data, because again, getting data is one thing, but acting on it is another.
So I would say marketing people, social media people come with their own type of challenges. One important milestone we have to kind of go over together is trust. Apparently although there have been tools in the marketing space for a while, people still distrust the numbers in a tool. And they need to overcome that because, okay, Meta is going to provide some data. They're not going to be 100% accurate because of the way they provide that data, for example. But you need to trust it as a whole. So instead of nitpicking a number that's 3 instead of 4, you should look at the whole strategy as a whole. There's also some analysis side that you have to do. And not all marketers are good analysts. Marketing people tend to be creative, tend to be, I don't know, in the idea space. But when it comes down to the data and figuring out the strategy and analyzing a lot of charts and data points, you need to turn on that analytic mindset. And it's a challenge for a lot of marketers to kind of do that. Most of them see this kind of, they come from a background where reporting was a chore that they had to do every month, and they don't want to do it. They want to spend time thinking about what should I write next on social or on a blog or something like that. But when it comes down to, okay, let's dig in and sift through the data and understand what triggered engagements or impressions or reach, it's a bit harder to do for some of them, not for all of them.
Yeah, for sure. For me as well, it's not that I'm not a very data-driven person, or let's say I'm taking this term and spinning it around. I'm data supported, but definitely not data driven. So it can be, yeah, it can be very just, you know, daunting because you're taking away from that creative space. And, you know, because social media can be very creative as well. And I feel like that's why maybe a lot of marketers struggle with it. But I feel like you're doing a lot, for, you know, promoting the tool, obviously, but also for educating people about it, because as I found, you've got some micro tools that are free that people can use. You've got webinars. You had a podcast, by the way. Tell me about the podcast and why you stopped doing it. You had reports and different studies, and obviously there is quite a big chunk of it is a product-led growth. So what do you think, what kind of content works best for your audience, education-wise, but also what is the biggest growth driver for you guys?
So in terms of, I'm going to start with kind of what's our growth engine. It has been traditional SEO all these years because it plays well into PLG. We don't really invest in paid, we invest in organic. So we don't have a paid budget, but we do invest in organic. Now, in terms of what works in terms of the organic strategy, you kind of nailed it. We do data articles, data studies, because it's important to position ourselves as a data expert in terms of social media. And it blends the technical muscle that we have with the marketing engine that we've built. So this is a good driver for us in terms of bottom of the funnel or mid funnel content that we do. We also do more top of funnel content where it's more in the education space, where you could kind of learn about what's available for Instagram analytics, what kind of information can you get for reels. So we also do those kind of sprinkled at the top. And this year, we figured we can pump the technical muscle into marketing a bit more. And we launched free tools. We're going to launch some more tools. We're leaning into what's called programmatic SEO right now, because we have a lot of data. We have a lot of technical expertise. We can blend that with marketing and create more value for our visitors. And actually, the phrase we're using right now is, we're transforming our landing page into a product in itself. So we're going to have two products, the product that's going to be the app, and the landing page that's going to be a product for visitors. The objective is still the same: help them get more value out of their time with Social Insight.
All right, I see. And are those micro tools and just the tools that you're promoting, are they AI?
So in the tools that we currently have, they don't have AI built in, but we're building it as we speak. We do have AI integrated in the product, and we can talk more about that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the website, we haven't yet deployed AI there. We've done a custom GPT with ChatGPT, and it got some usage. It's called a strategy assistant for social media. So yeah, it gets some usage. We tried that more as a form of being in the store, but definitely AI is coming to micro sites like free tools as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, at SaaS Group, we also do that. And it's a bit of a nifty kind of little new revenue stream. I mean, it's obviously very small, but still it's kind of fun to play with and kind of see if it becomes some kind of Apple store of some kind in the future, or maybe it dies down and becomes substituted with something else like AI agents or whatever. But okay. So what are the other tools, like micro tools, are we talking about here?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
So what we have currently deployed are engagement, what we call engagement calculators, where you would bring in a Facebook page or an Instagram profile or any other social media profile, and it gets analyzed and gives you a card that says, okay, this is the engagement rates and these are the comments and shares. This is just a quick way of getting the data that you need. In terms of what we're building ROI, return on investment, or something like that, calculator for social, because we found that social media managers have a hard time justifying their organic delivery. So what's the impact of the organic that we did? Some might use it to justify their job. Some might use it to get more budget into organic, but it's definitely a useful tool. So this is kind of cooking.
Cool. Okay, I would love to try it. Because yeah, justifying organic is a bit tough. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It is.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so regarding AI and building it, we have a pipeline of multiple other tools that are gonna reach both the app and the landing page. We kind of think of the landing page as a small teaser for the app experience as well. So kind of think executive summaries, content pillars, industry trends, brand analysis, and all these kind of little tools are gonna build up into the universe of Social Insider kind of free tools.
Yeah, awesome. All right, that sounds great. I actually want to try it now, but all right, after the episode. But tell me more about implementing AI into Social Insider, because again, such a kind of controversial thing. I think we did discuss it during our dinner in Bucharest as well. Like, should we do it? Should we wait it out? How to make sure that we actually add value with AI, not just slap AI label on it. So how did you guys decide that AI is going to be something that you want to implement? And how did you figure out what value is it going to give to your customers?
Yeah, we have a very strong technical muscle. And this has been both a pain and a great asset in the past. But being technical, we always looked at problems and found them maybe too challenging to tackle at that point. And AI has unlocked the solution for a lot of those problems. So we kind of implemented AI into flavors. One of them is products. So include AI something in the product. And the other layer would be including AI in the processes that we have. So instead of having the development team now uses AI to help them speed up development. Marketing team uses AI to help with data analysis and so on. So we've gotten more efficient internally with AI. And then there were these big problems like we have now with a feature called AI content pillars, but basically it's industry content pillars. And it looks at all the posts in social for your account and says, okay, this is part of this content pillar, this is part of news, this is part of employee advocacy, and so on. Before that, it would have been very, very expensive to build a system like that and get good results out of it. Right now, the great leveler came AI, and we kind of can do it with $90 and three computers in the office that have video cards and run models and stuff like that. So a thing that was once accessible to huge businesses with huge budgets at one point is now a commodity that everybody can use. And it kind of levels the playing fields. And yeah, we know this is the way because it unlocks great potential for us. And I feel like when you're, we're quite a small player, so we're not a huge enterprise. So I would say it helps us catch up. We don't have their budgets, but we do have speed and wits, so we can make it work, patch it together somehow, and offer value, gain more market share, and so on.
Okay, that sounds great. That sounds like this, you know, bootstrapper mentality that we're chasing at SauceGroup. So pretty cool. All right. Any like interesting maybe implementation of AI that really helped you guys? I don't know, in content creation or development, like maybe any tools that you would recommend?
Yeah. So for software development, we're using Claude by Anthropic. It's great. And it's a great piece of work and quite powerful at helping our engineers write code faster, write tests, move faster, better, higher quality work. In terms of the marketing part, we've created a custom GPT that analyzes data and has a format and provides some outputs that our content writers can use without analyzing Excels. Internally, we also started developing models that can help us do predictions for example, for follower numbers or for engagement numbers. Potentially, we would like to answer the question, if I continue doing things like I am doing right now on social, what should I expect in terms of results? So that they can get an early warning into where they're heading with their future engagement and follower growth. So these are kind of the nice projects we're building. On the other end, there's more like not glammy projects with AI that kind of help us do more, like analyzing posts, labeling them in a way. This is not glamorous, but it builds up into a great product experience for our users.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That's awesome. I mean, it's always kind of curious. I say always, but oh my God, we've actually been talking about AI for like, what, less than a year? It's super fun how it just became, you know, a reality and like a new norm. All right. Well, another thing that I wanted to ask you about, and I'm very curious about it because we also had a podcast with VP of marketing at OMR Reviews, this kind of G2 of DACH market. And, you know, customer relationships, customer success is always something that I think founders prioritize or hopefully prioritize, and something that I'm also very curious about. But one of the topics was, you know, how to actually like work with platforms like this and how to encourage people to leave reviews, because I think we touched upon it, right? Everyone wants a comparison. So I want to see who's talking, you know, good stuff about Social Insider and bad stuff about their competitors and so on. So one of the things that I saw, I think, on your social media on LinkedIn is you're giving away vouchers for like Amazon vouchers for, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it was reviews or survey participation. But still, I was like asking him if that's, because a lot of people are offering that. And it's like, well, is that like the biggest driver? Do people still need a $20 Amazon voucher to give you a review? Like, is there any way to like push them to do it that is not that? Maybe a bit more, I don't know, holistic, organic. And he was like, yeah, no. Still, give them a coffee voucher. Everyone's happy. But yeah, why were you doing it? And do you have the same opinion that, you know, coffee will drive your girls?
I wouldn't disagree with the opinion of the guys at OMR Reviews, because the whole kind of ecosystem does that with enticing user with a Starbucks voucher or something else. We were using the Amazon vouchers to get more answers for a survey that we're doing for creating a big piece of content on the pains of social media managers, actually. When it comes down to reviews, we figure organic is the way, but it has to be intentional. So we do value customer support and customer success a lot. We don't weirdly enough, we don't use AI for customer support because we don't like it personally as founders. So we'd rather have longer answer times than just have a bot on our website. But as to how do we get reviews, because G2 is important for us, how do we get reviews on G2? And it's mostly organic. And what we try to do is we try to understand if people are ready for the ask. Because at the end of the day, I'm going to ask you to do something you don't really had planned to do, and it's going to take 15 minutes of your time, and you probably have other things to do as well. But we figured that if you are in a conversation with a user and they're happy with the tool, they're very much inclined to help out with a review. I've actually had, like, we do customer interviews from time to time, and I had one customer interview with a client of an enterprise in Southeast Asia, and they said, guys, I love the product so much. What can I do? I want to help out. I mean, I'm already paying, but I want to do more. They're like, yeah, can you give us a G2? He was, yeah, doing it right now. I don't know. The people that you kind of have to feel if it's the right moment to ask for such a review. And I feel like successful customer support interactions, successful account management calls are great moments that have led to more reviews. We've used a flow in the past that would automatically ask for a review at some point, like in an email or an NPS survey, but those didn't work. So they don't convert. But when you have a conversation with a person, it's a human thing, and they're more inclined to say, yeah, I'll do it. And additionally, we found that when they have an ask for us, they want a bigger account, they want more of that, more of this, we have two options. One, charge them. Or two, if the ask is not that big, we can ask them for a review. And they're obviously happy with the tool because they want to expand and the review is going to be good. So these are kind of the two moments we reach out for reviews. We haven't seen success with like Starbucks vouchers for reviews. So, I mean, it's probably not for everybody. And that's what I'm saying, not that they don't work.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But it's a good point that, you know, when you're actually talking to a person, like I do it all the time. If I was actually talking to a real person that's been helping me, and at the end of the day, they're asking like, okay, how did it go? And, you know, tell us how the support was and how was your like overall, just like as an addition, how is overall working with the tool? I will always do it because I feel like it's in a way kind of continuing that conversation with that same person and kind of just saying thank you. So that definitely works.
Yeah, we kind of have this thing with keeping it human at Social Insider. So it's always easier to do things when it's human.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, AI is great, right? But this interaction, it's a bit different. All right, yeah, because I was also, okay, let's maybe come back to that question because I also am very curious why you guys stopped doing the podcast. But there was a time when, I don't remember the name of the tool anymore, but it was a tool that could, you know, create your virtual avatar to basically like potentially run a podcast for you. And I, like everyone was curious at SaaS Group and everyone started trying it. And I'm like, oh my God, but that's my job. And I was like, no. Why am I being substituted by this stupid avatar? And yeah, it gave me a bit of a, not a scare, but it was not flattering, let's say that. And then I realized that, no, I guess like still like this kind of, again, especially when you know a person for real, kind of continuing that relationship, it's a bit of a different kind of level of interaction on the podcast or somewhere else. And yeah, so I'm not that worried, at least not today.
I would say, I mean, it might work as a kind of a thing, but then ultimately you would have two AI avatars having a podcast and who'd watch that?
Yeah,
why. Maybe somebody's avatar would watch that to summarize it. And, okay, it should have been a newsletter, not a podcast then. But it's, I mean, there are some things AI can replace, and there are some other things that. So I want AI to do the busy work so I can do things like this, not the other way around, where I do Excels and AI does podcasts, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. What was that famous social media saying? Like, I don't want AI to like learn something so that I can do laundry. I want it the other way around. So yeah, exactly. All right. So I also, the podcast. Oh my God, why did you guys stop doing the podcast?
So the podcast was a project created to help Social Insider reach key players in the kind of marketing industry. Being a guest on a podcast is a good thing for everybody, I guess. And we didn't have the status to kind of ask for favors or ask for quotes from social media managers at big companies, but we had this opportunity of inviting them into the podcast. And we had a great person in the team, Maria. She gets yeses from people. Hey, do you want to be on our podcast? And people generally say yes to her, but not to everybody else. So it was a bit of magic there as well. But what happened was we had some turbulent times and we figured we need to cut down the noise and focus on what we do best, so traditional SEO. This is why it was paused. And then we didn't have that key person that could kind of lead the project, and we didn't have enough manpower to sustain that project. And this is why it's paused. But when it happened, it was quite interesting because we got some high profile people in the podcast discussing about their pains and social media and the way they do work. So it was quite interesting.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, absolutely understandable. All right. One other thing that I wanted to ask you, because, you know, you've been on the market for 7-8 years, I want to say. Yeah. And I guess we can talk about kind of coming out of this startup zone into the scale up. And I want to ask you how it went. And one of the reasons is because, again, I was creeping around your social media, of course, before this episode. And I found a post from Razvan, who's one of the co-founders, where he talked about P&Ls and, you know, how you guys might have missed the mark and didn't really care about, like, proper documentation until up to a point where it might have been hurting the company. And I feel like, you know, this is a very common thing for startups, because like we also sometimes buy companies that are a little bit more on the smaller side where, you know, there are no financial processes or no like HR processes, you know, processes in general are not very well established because you're still deep in the product and customer communication. So you're still in the hassling kind of mode, which is completely understandable, right? And we then have to take care of the processes after the acquisition. So yeah, how did you realize that there was, you know, there was a need for change? How did you make it happen?
So I think we have a very traditional story. We didn't figure out we need to change, but reality hit. So we had a not so great year in terms of financials, and we were like, whoa, what's going on? What are we getting? And then it's a painful process to get from childhood to adulthood or startup to scale up. So we said, okay, we need some help. And we got a CFO, actually, a fractional CFO. And okay, a year passed by and now we speak P&Ls and balance sheets and cash flow and all those fancy words we didn't care about in the past. I'm not saying that having a P&L and a spreadsheet or something is going to be the silver bullet that's going to heal everything in your business. But it has brought a flavor of process. And this is exactly what you were saying. When you're small, you don't really care about process because you kind of are in survival mode and need to grow and like get customers and figure all the things out. But then once you get past a certain point, this kind of attitude starts hurting. So it's no longer beneficial. This is exactly how we felt. Lack of structure was hurting. So we started leaning into the process and embracing structure a bit more. And now we do predictable work. We have a plan on where we're going and what we're doing here. We are using EOS, Enterprise Operating System, and kind of adapting it to what we need, but it has given us a heartbeat and the whole company moves in sync. And we now have, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have said we have OKRs and we use this with the team and everybody has a growth objective and stuff like that. But it feels like adulthood, like going into adulthood, and it's quite painful and it slows you down. The sensation that you will get when starting things is that you're slowing down. And you are, but you're building what you're kind of paying up debt that you kind of accumulated. So you have to build, and this is what we do. We build out processes and everybody has a responsibility and kind of layered everything with responsibilities and objectives and accountability. So I guess the driver was pain, just in short.
Okay.
The driver was pain.
Okay. So if you were to do it again, would you have started earlier?
In some aspects, yes, but not everywhere. So you cannot create a startup by firstly doing all the processes. We didn't hire an accountant until we got the first clients. So I guess we would still do this the same way. But there are some things that would have helped us if they were in place from the start.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Okay. I just have a couple more questions, the usuals. So far, what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure for Social Insider?
Last year was kind of the biggest win because we kind of, it took us 6 years to get to a number of customers or 5 years to get to a number of customers. And last year we grew that number by 50%. So it was like, okay, we worked a lot, but now like we worked in a different way and got great results. And this was because we kind of leaned into the process and transformed our mindset from, it's a classic story, from feature factory to kind of looking into distribution and figuring it out. Yeah, this kind of change in mentality was a great win for us. And it unlocked value for customers as well. So like for the past year, instead of adding features, we actually removed features that were kind of keeping us back and were not performing as well and keeping conversion rates low.
Okay. Anything on the failures or, learnings, biggest learnings?
Yeah. Having the numbers being product or financials earlier has definitely caused some pain because we were kind of going at it based on instinct. And instinct or intuition is a great valuable tool, but it can only take you this far. And once we've seen the numbers, we kind of have a feeling of what the data looks like and how the company breathes, we can now make better decisions for the future. And we now have a plan. So yeah, missing that data has caused us pain, a lot of pain in the past.
All right. Well, hopefully, now it's all gone. Wonderful. All right. So the last question is always about a hack. And, you can take it as, something that you do to grow a company or, your personal journey as a founder or, something that you would recommend to people using Social Insider.
So we at Social Insider have kind of a very boring hack that has brought us a lot of success, and it's resilience and showing up. We feel like we kind of broke through things at Social Insider, so kind of achieved some milestones by showing up every day and being consistent, putting in the effort, and it works. Now, in terms of unconventional hacks, I would say leave some room for the spark, so don't plan all your work, And we had some great sparks in the past. We did browser extension that did something when Meta had the likes hidden on Instagram, and it took off and we got like mentions in the press. So kind of work on unscalable things, basically. That's going to be the hack. If you're small, you can afford it, and you don't have a lot of red line along, you can do things, as opposed to when you're huge, like an enterprise, when you need to get it signed off by 50 department heads and legal and I don't know what. So kind of do things that don't scale.
Yeah. And I think it's also a very cool thing to remember that, you know, when you're a little bit smaller, you can experiment a little more. Like even like my own experience here at SaaS Group, like when I joined, it was just like throwing stuff on the wall and just like seeing what works, what doesn't. And then after a year, I was like, oh, okay, a lot of this actually worked. So now a lot of people know where we are. There's kind of a, like the brand is already there. So the stakes are a little bit higher. So you kind of just kind of experiment with whatever. But last year was fun. Yeah.
And I mean, I get it that you kind of, you build up and then you kind of feel risk adverse into trying these things, but there's still value in doing this. Because what am I willing to do that nobody else is willing, that's going to offer value and position me favorable in front of the audience? So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Exactly.
That's a great point. All right. That's a very cool point to finish this with, actually. So thank you so much for all the valuable advice and for telling your story. I think it's really cool what you're doing. You kind of like, just by, you know, hearing your story, you are introducing processes, but, you know, that leaving room for the spark thing, I'm going to steal that if you don't mind, because I think it's very important. Yeah. Cool. Great to have you here. Thank you so much.
It was awesome talking.
Same here. Anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders. And if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.